Hello, and welcome to the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative to record America's family history in sound. Oral histories are one of the most personal and rewarding ways to preserve family stories. The Tell Me a Story sessions are 45-minute interviews between two people with the assistance of a trained facilitator. Participants will receive a compact disc with the full interview. A copy will be archived at the Midwest Genealogy Center and, with permission, later made available to the public. And now, another story.
My name is Tiara Dixon, and today is September 10th, 2011. Would you please state your full name?
Joseph Gaines Kiefauer.
Good to meet you. When and where were you born?
I was born August 7th, 1949, in St. Joseph.
And how did your family come to live here?
Well, my father's family was from here. We lived in the home where he grew up, where he was born and grew up, and really lived there all. He lived there all his life, except when he was in the military. So my mother was from Dearborn, and the whole family was from this general area.
And what was your mother's name and maiden name?
Billy Fern Gaines.
And your father's name?
Joe Melvin Kiefauer.
What was the house or that you grew up in like?
Well, it still exists. It's on a farm a mile east of town. It was built frame home. I think they call it probably the craftsman style home, and it was built, I believe, in about 1918 or 1919.
Wow.
And small two bedroom home.
Did it have electricity, indoor plumbing?
Oh yeah. During my time, it did. I think it probably had electricity from the start. I think I can vaguely remember when a bathroom was added when I was a very small child.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it didn't have indoor plumbing until then.
Interesting. Were there any other special items in the house you remember?
Well, it's, I think one of the more notable things about it is it sits on a hill some distance from the highway. When I was a kid, for much of my childhood, there was a low water crossing that you went over to get to it. And, you know, it could be that when the creek was up that you couldn't get in or out. When I was probably... oh, I don't know, maybe 10 or 12 in that age range, we purchased a bridge from what had been on a county road over near Newmarket, and had it installed, and there's a bridge that goes across the creek now.
Huh. I noticed that you brought some notes with you today. And that you had started a paper we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
What can you tell me about that?
Well, the paper was started when I was 12 years old. The first edition was June 1, 1962. And it was the Edgerton Citizen. Later, we renamed it the Platte County Citizen. Of course, the paper still exists and has been published uninterrupted since that time. Several of my friends were involved in it at the start. Neil Wingate, my cousins Brian and Charles Kiefauer, Rob Sturgeon, Jim Neely were some of the people that were involved to some extent. It was a summertime project. I don't know. I've been thinking... why did we do this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think I was infatuated with I was interested in in newspapers at that time. And I think I probably felt it would be something good for the town. The town hadn't had a newspaper for quite some time. The first issue, there was only, it sounds weird, but there was only one copy. It was kind of like a prototype, I guess you would say. And I remember going around saying, would you buy this if we did it? And you know, of course, people said they would. And so we continued on. I remember that the first editions were printed on a mimeograph machine at the Baptist Parsonage, at least the first few. And later we bought a mimeograph machine. But it was just a summer project. By the end of summer, pretty much everyone had dropped out except me. And for some reason, I felt compelled or wanted to continue publishing it, and I did, and kept it going all through high school and college and into my adult years.
Interesting. So what types of stories did you cover? And as 12 years old, to have that kind of insight...
Well, you know, it was, I'm not going to say it wasn't probably rather juvenile, but the thing about it, it was never, from that very first edition, it was never kids-oriented. I mean, it was a general newspaper talking about things of general interest in this town. It may have been childish in the way perhaps it was put together or something, but it was never, it was not, we didn't talk about what we were doing, you know, as kids. It was a general newspaper.
How has the town changed? I imagine you've seen a lot of changes.
Oh yeah, there was I think it was sort of an end of an era when there were more local businesses and where you might conceivably do a significant amount of shopping here. Mm-hmm. We had two main grocery stores. I can remember when the building across the street was a hardware store and then it became a grocery store. I can remember two cafes, a dry goods store, I remember a Western Auto store, the mill, is now gone. It wasn't producing flour in my days, but it was a feed store, feed business. There was a more of an opportunity at that time to actually shop in towns of this size.
Mm-hmm. What caused so many of those businesses to turn over? Because I have never seen any of them, you know, as a person who's just lived here 5 years now.
Well, I think it's indicative. I mean, it's, Edgerton is not unlike Dearborn and Camden Point and a lot mm-hmm. of other towns. I guess it's just the economics of the world today. I don't know, but... it's strange. It's bizarre in a way to me the way things have developed. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have this beautiful library, you have a bank, nice bank building. Mm-hmm. As I understand it, I don't believe you can buy gasoline in this town.
That's right.
That's bizarre. But there are other places like it, and I don't know why. that has turned out that way. I guess it's not unusual to think that you wouldn't have a large supermarket here or something, but it's strange how things have developed. But there are other towns just like it.
Do you remember, as a kid running this newspaper, interviewing people or any sensational stories?
Well, you know, as time went on, you know, as an adult, we did a lot of interviews. We did a lot of, I would say, a hallmark of what we did was human interest type feature stories. We did many of them. One of the, but when I was a little kid, I mean, that first summer, I remember we interviewed Mr. and Mrs. Wright, who lived up in the west part of town, and they had they were beekeepers, and they Wright's clover honey was produced in this town. I mean, it was a little bottling plant. The building is still there. It's up near the school, and so that was probably one of the first interviews we ever did, and that was in that first summer. Mm-hmm. But as time went on, we did a lot of interviews. I was just trying to think. This is, you know, after I was an adult, but my wife and I got married in 1971. Her name is Glenna, and she was co-publisher of the paper from then on, and is as much involved as I was in it. But we, I can remember interviewing Delbert Weiss, a local painter. Mm-hmm. Did a lot of stories of people like that had some sort of talent or interest. From a fairly early point, we covered more than just Edgerton. We certainly covered Dearborn and Camden Point, mm-hmm. because it was in the same school district. And fairly early on, I sold advertising in Smithville and things like that. So, I mean, you know, it branched out. But in recent and later years, I remember I cannot recall his name, but a young man in Smithville who was waiting for a heart transplant, and this was a long time ago, and it was uncommon. Christian Barnard, a surgeon in South Africa, was about the only one that was doing this, and he was trying to get money to go to South, and he did. He went to South Africa, got a heart transplant. So we did stories like that. We did, like I say, just any number of human interest type. We did probably did more than one story on him. I mean, that was an ongoing thing. Mm-hmm. But anybody that had a hobby or a unique business or something, we did a story.
What sorts of thing, or what was your favorite thing to do for fun in Edgerton growing up?
Oh, I can. I only did it once, but a unique thing that we had here in Edgerton that you may not have been aware of was we had a movie theater. When I was like about probably a first grader, it was on this block, Schaefer Theater, and I saw the movie Davy Crockett, which is a current first run type movie in Edgerton at Schaefer Theater. That's the only movie I ever saw there, and it burned down, and there was a big fire that burned many buildings on this block. And that was one of the buildings that was destroyed. This is way before my time, but there was this indoor theater that I went to. But in previous years, on this block, the Schaefer family. I can remember the sort of the ruins of this. There was large greenhouses on this block that the Schaefer family owned, and there was an outdoor theater. It was not a drive-in theater, but it was a park-like setting. You sat, as I understand it, you sat on like park benches, and you watched the movie outside, and it was a pretty park-like setting, and it was right over here, right to the east of us, east of the library here, and this is what they did in the summertime because there was no air conditioning, and so you watched the movie outside, and I never experienced that, but there was still remnants of that theater when I was a kid.
What was school like for you as a child in Edgerton?
Well, I went to all my I went through sixth grade here. When I started at Edgerton, of course, I attended the building that was just recently demolished. When I started at Edgerton, it was not too many years after the formation of the North Platte School District. Prior to that, there had been an Edgerton High School, but I only went to North Platte schools. And when I started up here, it was through the eighth grade here at Edgerton, first through eighth grade. They did not have a kindergarten. I did not attend kindergarten. But by the time I got to the sixth grade, junior high had been moved to Dearborn. So I went to junior high and high school at Dearborn. And it was interesting. I mean, I don't know if I can think of anything specific. We had a lot of fun. I can remember playing out on the playground up there, meeting people.
Did you participate in any school activities or sports?
I was in the band, played clarinet, and in the earlier years of high school, I was in. I played Little League baseball here, and I was not very good, but I did play Little League baseball here in Edgerton. As far as school, I was in track and basketball and football a little bit in the earlier part of high school.
Now, you had said your father was a farmer.
Yeah, I think his main occupation was postmaster here. He was postmaster here, I think, in 1959 until he retired. And that was his main occupation. He was a farmer in addition to that. And then after he retired, he was more full-time into farming.
What world events had the most impact on you while you were growing up? And did any of them personally affect your family?
Well, you know, we've had obviously some major events here in recent years, world events that have impacted us. And in thinking about those, I have thought back many times on some of those earlier events. I can remember the Cuban Missile Crisis. I don't have any idea how old I would have been then. I don't know exactly what year that was. But I knew it was happening. Our family was pretty attuned to current events, I think, and I'm sure things like that were talked about in our house. I can remember thinking it was major. I mean, this is important. I don't, you know, oftentimes kids are, you know, people say, well, how do you talk to kids about these things? I don't remember anybody really talking to me about them. I don't feel that I was ever frightened or, you know, apprehensive about things like that. I guess when I was a very young child, the Korean War was going on. Mm-hmm. I don't remember anybody ever sitting me down and explaining that to me. Nobody I knew was directly involved, so therefore I probably vaguely knew it was happening, but it was not something that worried me or concerned me. Mm-hmm. President Kennedy being assassinated, of course, was probably, it was a little bit older then. I think I was probably 14 or so. I can remember the classroom I was in at Dearborn, and that is much more vivid. And watching all the events on television and in school all day, which was not something that you would normally do, and there was no CNN or anything like that in those days, of course. And to have the news on all day was unusual, but, you know, unprecedented. So certainly noteworthy. I was talking to a colleague who was a little bit older than I was, old enough to be in the military during that time, years later, and he was telling me about how they were on alert and all these things that were happening. And to be honest with you, I hadn't thought about that. I knew it was a terrible thing, but I hadn't thought in terms of the country really being in peril or anything. Mm-hmm. And hadn't crossed my mind to consider that the military would have been on alert and all those things. So I guess it didn't, I was aware of it, but it didn't upset me in the sense that I was really worried about as a kid, my personal safety or welfare.
Mm-hmm. Your father served in the military? Was it during
World War II? He was in the Army Air Corps. And he was a staff sergeant. He was proper term is crew chief, as far as the maintenance and upkeep of fighter planes.
How were holidays, birthdays, Christmas celebrated in your family?
Well, we had birthday parties. I don't think they were extravagant affairs, but we did have birthday parties. May have had a friend or two over, not much beyond that. Halloween, we always had I never went trick-or-treating in my life as a kid. Lived in the country. I don't know if that was part of it. We always had some friends over, a family that we were very close to. Almost always we got together and did things on Halloween. Thanksgiving, the traditional big dinner. Same for Christmas, big dinner. Always did everything on Christmas Day. The grandparents came on both sides, came to our house, so we didn't really travel.
Were your grandparents from this area?
Yes, my mother's parents were. When I was a kid, lived in Dearborn, and that's where they were essentially from.
What were their names?
Arch and Wilhelma Gaines.
And her maiden name, do you know it?
Stafford. She grew up north of Dearborn, and there's still quite a few people named Stafford in the area, I believe, that are related. But she grew up on a farm north of Dearborn. My grandfather, Arch Gaines, kind of a jack of all trades, had done a number of things in his life. He used to run a bakery in Dearborn at one time. He was the mayor of Dearborn at one time. Did a lot of things. He passed away when I was in, I think he passed away before I, the day before I was going to go into first grade. I think that's about the correct time. My other grandparents were Willie and Grace Kiefhoffer, and he died during World War II. He was, of course, not in the military. He passed away when my dad and his brother were serving in the war. So he died during the war. I never knew him. Mm-hmm. He died before I was born. And then Grace Kiefhoffer, my grandmother, passed away, I believe, in 1959. And she lived just down the street, about a block down the street, to the west.
Huh. What? Who was the oldest relative you remember as a child? The oldest relative, and do you remember any stories or anything about them?
Well, let me see. I did not know any of my great grandparents. My father's aunt, Ida Mae Sale, lived at Camden Point in a very small little. Seemed to me like at the time, I don't know, it seemed like a little, almost two-room house, just a very small little house. And I remember we would go visit her on occasion in Camden Point. I guess she was probably the only surviving member of that generation. Mm-hmm. And my sister was particularly close to her, but I do recall visiting her.
And then did you go on to have children then?
Yes, we have two daughters. The oldest is Kathleen Grace. Kathleen married at, named after my sister Kathleen and my grandmother Grace, and she's a school librarian in Missouri, a small district, Northeast Vernon County School District. Mm-hmm. And my younger daughter is Anne Elizabeth, and she is a vocal music teacher at Cass Midway School.
Neat. What stories have come down to you about your parents or grandparents or ancestors, if any?
Well, I would. Both of my grandfathers were essentially orphans. My grandpa Kiefhoffer, both of his parents had died by the time he was probably a teenager. And so the family was, they stayed in the general area, but they were sort of scattered. They kind of farmed out to different people and relatives, so they didn't get to grow up together, at least in a later part of childhood. my grandpa Gaines, his father had passed away, and his mother had remarried, and although they say on good terms, I guess it was probably awkward or something. He more or less grew up with living with an uncle, and I think kind of difficult times for both of them, and not always treated quite as good as they should have been.
Mm-hmm. What was your profession, and how did you choose it?
Well, you know, I told you how I got started. For better or for worse, what I decided to do when I was 12 years old pretty much set the tone for my whole life. I have been in the newspaper business for most of my life, except for 12 years when I worked for the National Auctioneers Association in Overland Park. Even there, I started working for the National Auctioneers Association. I was director of publications. I was essentially the magazine editor. So that was related to journalism. Mm-hmm. And then I got promoted to, I was eventually the executive vice president. And probably the biggest part of my work there was planning conventions and things of that nature. But still, I always felt as if it was not, in many ways, unlike running a newspaper. You had this, instead of having subscribers, you had members, and you had, you know, this community of people that you worked with, and many of the things that I did were still public relations related. And so even that job, I felt like was, I probably wouldn't have been in it had I not made this choice back when I was a kid. After I left the National Auctioneers Association, I've worked several other newspapers, and I'm an advertising salesman for a newspaper in Kansas City now.
Mm-hmm. Papers that were published back some years now, do you know if they're archived anywhere at the University of Columbia or with any library?
We always sent our newspapers, when I was the publisher here, we always sent them to be microfilmed at the State Historical Society.
So that is where our Edgerton people could go to find.
So I would assume that most the Edgerton citizen really took the form of a more traditional newspaper in about 1966, when we started having it printed at the printing plant in Plattsburgh. And along about that time, we joined the Missouri Press Association, probably when I was about a senior in high school, long in that age, and became more mainstream into the standard operating procedures of a newspaper. And I couldn't say for sure, but I would guess that probably from along about that time forward, those papers have been archived.
Okay.
I could say with certainty that as long as I was here, and of course, as you know, the newspaper was, we sold it, and Let me see here. The last issue that Glenna and I produced was April 29, 1983. After we sold it, in the years since then, it was moved to Plant City. And I can't vouch for exactly how they handled it. The owners, the gentleman that owns it now, Lee Stubbs, is not the person I sold it to. He's about the third owner since I sold it. But I would guess that they're probably archiving them still. But I know all the papers that we produced in Edgerton, at least after those first couple years, probably are archived in the state. By the way, we did change the name of the paper. Let me see. You know, I'm not sure I can tell you when that occurred.
What was the name change?
Platte County Citizen, from Edgerton Citizen. The first Platte County Citizen, which we produced January 6, 1978. And then we published until 83. The Platte County Citizen until 1983 when we sold it. I'm sure some people here were disappointed in that move that we did. From the very early times, as I said, that we had covered more than Edgerton. And by the time, 1977, 1978 rolled along, we were really trying to cover northern Platte County. And we felt that it would be more appropriate and advantageous to us to have a name that with a little broader appeal. And so that's why we did it. But, kind of took away, people were proud of the paper here. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it was still here, but it was a different name. I remember we'd made a nice design and a heading and everything. And
our library,
we were going to have the name with the new logo on the office window.
We're not.
We called a sign painter, and we said what we wanted, but don't come until, because we wanted to announce it in the paper first. Mm-hmm. But he came early, and I don't know why. We didn't tell him just come back, but we let him go ahead and put the new name on. And of course, that kind of, what's this, that I don't know why we did that. I don't know why we just didn't tell him to come back, because it kind of messed up our announcement, but we let him go ahead and paint the sign when we hadn't announced the new name in the paper yet.
Talk about, if you will, about growing this, being a young entrepreneur and growing this business. That's pretty spectacular. I can't imagine a 12-year-old kid in today's world doing that.
Well, first of all, I do want to mention my parents. It was never their paper. They didn't do it, but obviously they were very, very supportive in a lot of ways. My mother in particular, and she wrote a column, kind of a humor column in the paper for years, until we sold the paper. So they were very supportive, but yeah, it was unusual. Maybe the times are a little different that would let you do that. I don't know. I'm trying to think if you could do that now. I don't know.
It does seem a little extraordinary.
It was weird. But I remember, I didn't know, obviously didn't know a lot of things. I remember the grocer over at Dearborn, Paul Frieders. I don't know if I had sold him an ad, or maybe I was selling our papers in his grocery store. We did sell our papers in his grocery store, but he paid me some money. And I can remember, it was a little embarrassing at the time. I didn't know how to write a receipt. I don't even know if I knew what a receipt was. And I remember him showing me how to do it. And like I say, I was a little embarrassed, probably because I, like to admit you don't know things. But it was, there were, I'm sure, episodes like that. But that's something that I remember. And I remember him showing me how to do that. And I went door to door, sold the paper. There was not subscriptions. I think it was 10 cents to begin with. Went door to door. And, quite frankly, end of the day, I had a lot of money for a little kid. It wasn't a bad deal. I was not a very, I was kind of shy kid. I was not very assertive, but for some reason, in regard to this, I was persistent, and I just felt like I just want everybody in this town to buy the paper, and almost everybody did. And I would go up to, every house in this town. And people that I didn't particularly like, people I was afraid of, people that had mean dogs, and sell them this paper. And I don't know why, but I just felt like you had to have everybody take it. And pretty much everybody did. And people will say, probably people say here today, that I know everybody in town. It's a little town, I know everybody. But very few people know everybody. Most people really don't know everybody in town. If there was anybody that did in those early days, it was me. I truly knew everybody in this town. And had probably been in their house. Now, when I got older, when I got to where I could drive, that wasn't quite as cool to be walking around selling the paper. I changed it. I made, a year's subscription, and we mailed it and all that. And truth be told, I think that was the reason I did it. It was seemed kind of childish, and I kind of wanted to get away from that. But for many years, and it was, people would invite me in real cold weather, give me something hot to drink.
Because you were out delivering the papers.
Yeah, once a week. Back when I was, in school, the paper did it on Saturday.
How did you deliver into the rural area, or was it just this local town?
We had... I had schoolmates in, Dearborn and Camden Point who would deliver papers for me over in those towns. Never to the extent we did it here, but some. And we would... I think we sold them in this grocery store in Dearborn and Camden Point. I don't remember if we, in those very, very early days, if we mailed them to people or not. We may have. Mm-hmm. Later on, when we mailed them to all the subscribers, we certainly did. But I don't know. I guess people could pay and we'd mail it to them, but I don't quite remember doing that.
It is an extraordinary story. Yeah. I have a son and about that age, and I really just can't imagine him taking that kind of initiative. Oh, are there any other experiences that you would like to share with us or could share with us?
Well, I don't know how much time I've taken all your time here, but I was just trying to think of some of the things that happened. I was very embarrassed about this at the time, but I guess after this at this stage of the game, it's no big deal. It's kind of funny, but I remember one time delivering papers, and I was down here at the mill, which was a feed store at those days. And I had this real nice new coat on. It was, the imitation leather type, it was vinyl, I guess you would say, coat. And they had a wood stove in the office. And I wasn't leaning right up on the stove, but I was pretty close to the stove and just standing there talking to people. And pretty soon, it kind of smelled funny in there. And pretty soon there was kind of like smoke. And I'd burned a great big hole in the back of this new coat, the vinyl part. Mm-hmm. And I was embarrassed by that. But that I was delivering papers when that happened. I never got bit by a dog. There was some very mean dogs. I don't know how it is now, but certainly in those days, dogs ran loose in Edgerton. And I can remember lots of times being very apprehensive about going up to house. I remember one house up in the north part of town, and they had this collie dog, which I don't view a collie dog as necessarily a mean type of dog, but this one was always chained up, and it was mean. And it would try to bite you if it could. And I went up to their front. I looked around. I didn't. They had a dog house, and they had a chain, and I didn't see the dog. And so I went up on their front porch to knock on their door, and I looked down, and there was the chain, but the dog wasn't on the end of it. And I don't know where it was, but fortunately I got away. It didn't get me. But I thought, oh boy, where is the dog? But I don't know. We had a, I was going to mention, you're having Pioneer Days now. Mm-hmm. We were very involved in the centennial in 1971. Mm-hmm. And that was a very good thing for the town, I think. And then the next year after the centennial, that was when Pioneer Days was established. The next year they wanted to do it again, and so they called it Pioneer Days. So that's kind of how that got started. We were involved in that for many years.
And there's been a resurgence in the last probably 3 or 4 years of interest in that.
But that's where it started. It was an outgrowth of the centennial in 1971.
I know when they reorganized and they were trying to get the Pioneer Day Festival started again, how they would talk in town about how much fun they used to have.
But I think it's been held all the way through, has it not?
I don't know because I haven't lived here all these years, but I know that there's definitely been a real push into making it what it was.
Some of the momentous things, I guess, we had a big flood in the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
All these little bridges in Edgerton were washed out by that flood. Mm-hmm. And there were a number of houses in a low-lying area that were destroyed. I mean, there were houses that were literally gone. And there were houses that were moved some distance, and that was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And it was they voted to replace all these little bridges, and that was a thing that Edgerton did after that flood. It really changed the looks of things, and there were many more houses in the low-lying area before that flood. And I remember doing a little, and this was early on, but it was one of the first times we ever had photographs in the paper. And we had purchased a type of duplicator that would allow you to reproduce pretty crude photos. And I remember when they opened these bridges and everything, we had pictures, and that was the first time that we'd ever had pictures in the paper, actual photographs.
Huh. That was probably pretty exciting. Mm-hmm. You've come a long way.
Mm-hmm. And this was early on, and they were not, this was before it was printed on a regular printing press, but it was, after a fashion, it was reproduction of photos.
Mm-hmm.
All that technology has gone away. You know, mimeographs, things like that, of course, don't exist anymore. We were never involved in it personally, but when I started, many of the newspapers around here were printed on lead type.
Mm-hmm.
And called letterpress printing. There was a paper in Dearborn, for example, in those days, and several other papers that were lead type. And we never used that technology. When we got into the real printing, on a real printing presses, it was offset presses, which is basically what is used today. Photo offset presses.
Mm-hmm. Anything else in your notes that you would like to share with us?
Well, I do have a couple of things that might be of interest, just how things are done differently now. But I do want to say that we covered, in the later years, we really tried to cover a very broad area. We covered basically Smithville to Weston. Even though we called the paper the Platte County Citizen, Smithville was very important to us from almost the very start. And I always appreciate all the support that we got in Edgerton, Dearborn, places like that, of course. But let's face it, the advertising was not here to support a paper of the sort we were trying to do. And Smithville and Platte City were really our where our advertising dollars came from. But we covered the Smithville, North Platte, Platte City, and West Platte school districts, and we really tried to cover them equally. And I think we did a pretty good job. And there were no cell phones, there was no email. We never owned a fax machine. I don't think I even knew what a fax machine was. One of the next places I went to after I left here, we had a crude fax machine, and I think it was the first one I'd ever seen. So it was not easy to try to cover this sprawling. It would be easier today, I think, with cell phones and email to try to accomplish what we were doing. Because it was very, very difficult, because you had to drive around a lot more. I don't know, I was just thinking back on a couple of things. Election coverage. Up until just the last few years that we were here, you used to go down, like, on the courthouse lawn on election night, and there would be this big, huge blackboard with the names of all the precincts, and they'd be in counting the precinct, you know, the votes in Edgerton, and then somebody come out and they'd say, and then they'd get up there and write the vote, you know, Edgerton, so many people voted for this person, so many people voted for that mm-hmm. person. And it was a big, long, drawn-out thing, and, you know, there would be like an ice cream social on the courthouse lawn while people were standing around waiting for these results. And we always tried to publish, at least in later years, the full results, you know, of all the precincts. We'd write it, we wrote it out, and then just reproduced what our handwriting, you know, reproduced that. But towards the end there, you know, the punch card voting and the hanging chads and all that in Florida of a few years back where, you know, it was such a problem. Well, they went to those punch card voting machines, and you'd take these cards and you'd punch holes in where you wanted to vote, who you wanted to vote for. And we took them, they took them down to the county clerk would take them to the TWA administration building down by the airport and run them through their machine, and in about, what, 5 minutes, there were all the results, you know. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the same anymore. The big deal of being down on the courthouse lawn and waiting in anticipation of the results, all of a sudden it was just instantaneous, basically. They get all the votes, run them through the machine, and there were the results. And like I say, everybody thought it was wonderful. And if there was any problem with hanging chads or anything like there was in Florida in the presidential election here a few years ago, we didn't know it. Nobody thought there was a problem. But that was a big change. I don't know. A lot of different things. I have worked at several newspapers since I left here. And most of them have been in small communities. And working at a newspaper, and I suspect in your job it's somewhat similar, you really become schooled on the community. You certainly do with a newspaper. I didn't at first understand how I could even do it. I knew so much about this town just from personal knowledge. And then to go somewhere else and be the... just. I left here. I went to work for a company in Chillicothe that owned the paper in Chillicothe. But I wasn't the editor. I was a reporter. And then I got the opportunity to be the publisher in Ironton, Missouri, the Mountain Echo. And that was the first time I was back being the publisher. And so I just, would you like to have this job? Yeah, I think I'll take it. So I move almost instantly, in a matter of days, to Ironton, Missouri. And I don't know anything about this town. And you have to write about this town and what's happening, and you know nothing about it. But it's a crash course, you know. It being in that situation, and I was only there a short time, but you become very educated real quickly. Mm-hmm. But I've never, even though it's worked out and it's been fine in other places, I've never had the level of understanding and background and access that I've had here. Mm-hmm. It just, you know, because of the way it was, it just can't really be duplicated. I remember having the Platte County Sheriff's Department has grown to be a pretty large organization these days, but it wasn't so big then. And I just remember the access that I had and the rapport that I had with the Platte County Sheriff's Department, with fire departments and people.
And
like
at what
that.
Age were you able?
Well, now, granted, this is a little bit older. This is, you know, I was 21 or older.
Uh-huh.
You know? But this was just the result of being from here, having so much knowledge in your head of just how things were, mm-hmm. and how they worked and who was who and all these things that you can get somewhere else, but it's difficult to duplicate how it was here. I know in that next town, Ironton, where I was the publisher, it was quite a wake-up call. Very difficult to deal with the sheriff down there. It was actually a much smaller rural community, county. And I just thought, my gosh, how am I going to do this? I can't get anything out of this guy. You know, yeah. It was quite a shock coming from a place where I really had a rapport and really had a working relationship with some of those people. So this was a good area, Edgerton and the other communities.
Were your first papers handwritten? Or were they typed?
They were typed, typewriter.
They were typed.
A mimeograph, and I'm sure you've never seen one.
I don't think so.
They might have one in a museum somewhere. A mimeograph was a, they used them at schools a lot. There was this, I think they called it a master. It was a, made out of some material. It was kind of a plastic type film material, and you put it in a typewriter, and you adjusted the typewriter to where it wasn't hitting the ribbon. Mm-hmm. Instead of hitting the ribbon, the keys were pressing holes in this film on this master, and you had to. And of course, you made mistakes. It wasn't like a computer, you know.
Right.
You had to put correction fluid on it or something. So you type this all up on this master. You'd take the master and you would put it on this little hand-cranked machine. You would wrap it around a drum, and then you would turn the machine, and there was fluid, there was ink-type fluid in it that would print on the paper. And that's what a mimeograph is. And we went through various types of those type of machines. But yes, it was always typed on a typewriter. And then I would say, before I got out of high school, I had purchased typesetting machine. I think it was, it may have been after I was in high school, out of high school, maybe I was in college. I bought some typesetting equipment. And it cost, over $5,000, I don't know.
Wow.
It was two machines, and it was kind of like typewriters, but they were just the same thing that other newspapers used.
Wow. That's a pretty big deal, to be that young. And
it was a lot of, it was quite an expense. But in those days, all up until not too long ago, I don't think there's very many papers doing it this way now, but it was a cut-and-paste concept. At the end, when we sold our paper, we were using what was called photo offset equipment. And it was, you would type on a machine, and it was kind of like on film.
Mm-hmm.
And then you developed, kind of like you would develop film, and there was the image that you had typed. And then you cut it up and pasted it up on pages and photographed it and went from there. This was all before now it's more like all the newspapers is like a computer, on a computer, digital type. Situation, but when I was there, it was the most modern thing there was.
I imagine.
I mean, we had the most modern things there were. It's just that it's really advanced since then.
Mm-hmm. Neat. Anything else that you have planned to talk about?
Oh, I don't know. That's about it. I will say, when we sold the paper, we had, I looked this up, we had 3,268 subscribers.
Wow.
Which, and we had the largest weekly newspaper in Plant County, even though it was in Edgerton. And I will say that... All right, we had employees at that time when we sold. Bill Graham was the associate editor.
Yeah.
Bill went on to work for a number of years at the Star, Kansas City Star. Becky Sellers and Janet McNeil from here in Edgerton did composition and proofreading. And Becky Sellers also sold advertising for us there at the end when we were, at the time we sold our paper.
Well, I really appreciate you coming in to talk to us about that.
Well, I enjoyed it.
I did too.